fellow risk takers, this is your worst podcast host. In fact, I just saw some person or a couple of people published an episode of their show called The Worst. One of my friends and former guests, Frank, basically put a note, wait a minute, you can't be the worst. Andrew is the worst. So the fight didn't last long. I triumphed. I'm still the worst. Andrew Stotz from A-Stotz Academy, continuing my discussion with Larry Swedrow, who for 3 decades was the head of research at Buckingham Wealth Partners. You can learn more about his story in episode 645. Larry stands out because he bridges both the academic research world and practical investing. Now today, we're diving into a chapter from his recent book, Enrich Your Future, The Keys to Successful Investing. And specifically, we're talking about chapter 40, The Big Rocks. Larry, take it away.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. Good to be back. So like all the other chapters in the book, this one begins with a story that we use to, as an analogy to help understand a financial issue. In this one, it's a story I read about where a professor in time management talked to a bunch of doctoral students, and she brings out a beaker and fills it up with some big rocks. And then when she couldn't get any more big rocks in, she asked the class, is the jar filled? And some couple of people shout out, yes. And she says, oh, really? She pulls out from under the desk a bunch of smaller rocks and starts to fill in the spaces between the big rocks until no more small rocks could fit in. And she then asks the class, is the jar now filled? And the class kind of says, not really. And so she says, that's right. She pulls out a box of sand and pours the sand in and sprinkles it until no more sand could fill. And then she asks one more time, is the jar now filled? And the class says no, and says that's good. And she pulls out a glass of water, fills it up until no more water could fill in. She then asks the class, so what's the moral of the story? And one bright, eager student jumps up and says, no matter how busy your calendar is, you can always fit in one more meeting. And after the laughter dies down, she says, that's not really the message. Of course, the message is, if you don't put the big rocks in first, you could never put them in, right? And so she said, the question then is, what are the big rocks in your life? And is it trying to outperform the market or spending time with your family, et cetera? And we've looked at all of the evidence, and if you put in all this time trying to beat the market, trying to outperform professionals who are spending all of their time, have a lot more access to data, as well as all of the training, et cetera, the odds are you're outperforming them are asymptotically close to zero. They're not zero, but especially after taxes, it's so low that it's not prudent to try. And as my book, co-authored with Andrew Birkin, The Incredible Shrinking Alpha, shows, it's getting harder and harder to outperform over time. It was about 20% of professionals were outperforming back in 1998 when I wrote my first book. About 13 years later, it was down to 2% even before taxes and 1% after, and it's gotten even harder ever since. So that raises the question, what are the big rocks? What's important? And so I told the story in the book, which is a true story, happened with me. It happened a bit after my first book was published in 98. I got a call from a doctor who relayed this story to me. It was in the late 90s, of course, and a lot of his friends, doctors, as it turns out, if you ask most investment advisors, they will tell you that doctors are the worst investors because they confuse intelligence with wisdom. And because they're obviously highly intelligent individuals, you can't get through med school and not be intelligent, then you could apply that intelligence and outperform the market. Whenever I hear that from a doctor, I always tell them, well, I graduated number one from my MBA program. Would you let me operate on your patients? And they laugh. And I say, well, why do you think you can use your intelligence to outperform the investment. When you have no training in investment, I bet you haven't even taken a single course in capital markets theory. And you get a duh kind of answer, right? So the doctor went on to tell me this story that a bunch of his friends had been making a lot of money, outperforming the market, buying these stocks that related to medicine they were researching. So he decided he ought to do it. So after coming in, after putting in maybe an 80-hour week, he'd come home, go to his computer instead of sitting down to a dinner with his wife, read a book to his new baby, you know, new child, and spend hours researching, looking at the charts, listen to videos and all this stuff, reading blogs. And very quickly, it turned a small investment, he said, into 100 grand. The problem was he no longer had a wife, no longer was a father to his child. You know, no one got divorced at this point, but he was spending no time with his family, and his family was not happy about it. The good news was he actually, over the next several months, lost the entire 100 grand. Mm. And if someone who had read my book recommended he read my first book, The Only Guide You'll Ever Need to Winning Investment Strategy, he read it and figured out why he was playing the loser's game, not the winner's game. And he was one of those losers, both in investing and in the game of life, because he was focusing on the little rocks, the sand, the water, and the pebbles, not the important things, his wife, his family, etc. So he, after reading my book, he gave all that up. And now he had much more time to spend with the family. So now he said he was playing the winner's game in life and investing. And of course, that made my day. No authors generally get rich from writing books on investing, unless you're Warren Buffett and he's already rich, or, you know, or John Bogle or somebody like that. Then there was one other story I added because it really resonated. I was introduced to a fellow who was the assistant treasurer of Anheuser-Busch and in charge of their pension investments. And they were actively picking money managers in each asset class, reviewing performance and shifting every few years based on past performance. And I went and explained to him our strategy and showed him the evidence that that strategy didn't work. Past performance is not a good predictor. And it all resonated with him. And he decided to become a client of my firm. Months later, I met with him and we were talking about how things are going. His wife was with him. He said, never mind how things are going from the investment side. Rick was his name, is now spending, she counted, it was 10 hours a week he was spending previously on investing, now when he came home, a couple hours a night during the week and stuff, that he no longer was doing. He was now spending with his wife. So you multiply that, it was 500 hours a year he had recaptured to spend on big rocks instead of reading Barron's and watching Wall Street Week and reading the journal or whatever, which is really nothing more than the sand, the gravel, and those small pebbles. So that, again, made my day, because helping somebody improve the quality of life is much more important, I think. That's really the big rocks in our life.
Mm. There's a couple of things you mentioned it, where you said one line, luckily, he lost all his profits within a few months, which on the face of it, you would say is not lucky, but it woke him up that he got back his family and his relationships.
I have another story related to that, which is worth repeating, because this fellow eventually came to work for Buckingham. I'll tell you the story. And then he left and formed his own firm. And now the firm is called Hill Investment Group. So anyone wants to go look it up. It's a large RIA on its own. And Rick Hill, someone had given him my book. He was working at some brokerage firm or something like that. And he read my book and said, hey, this is the right way to invest. He came and applied for a job. We had just started out. We gave him a really low-level job. That's all we had open at the time. But he would take anything just to get and to play the right game. And over lunch one day, he told me he had bought some high-tech stock. Now, this is like 99, all right? Maybe it might have been early 2000, somewhere around there. And I said to him, the worst thing that could happen to you is you'll make money on this, because then you'll confuse luck with skill. The best thing that can happen to you is it'll crash and you'll stop doing that. So I said, at the very least, set a stop loss. So if it does crash, you don't lose all of your money. Sure enough, as it turned out, lucky for him, the stock crashed. That may have been around March 2000 or somewhere around there. Stock crashed and he stopped picking stocks, never bought another individual one as far as I know, and then went on to a career as an advisor and formed his own firm, etc. So he found the winner's game in both life and investing for his clients.
Mm-hmm. There's another quote, which is great in this, which is a quote from Paul Samuelson. And he said, "You shouldn't spend much time on your investments. That will just tempt you to pull up your plants and see how the roots are doing. And that's bad for the roots."
Yeah. I love that. One of my favorites.
For sure. And then final piece of advice out of this, I think really, really can help people who really are inclined to trade. And that is, you say, if you find that you need excitement from your investments, you should set up a special entertainment account. The assets inside that account should not exceed more than a few percent of your total portfolio. Invest the rest of your money in what I believe to be the winner's game. And I think that that is actually a very good solution for people who do feel like, I gotta trade.
Yeah.
So,
you know, there are people who know they shouldn't take their IRA account to the racetrack or the casinos in Las Vegas or Macau, wherever they are, right? So, but they're willing to go and take $100 or $500 or $1,000, consider it entertainment. If they blow it, they blow it. And the odds are they likely will blow it because the odds are stacked against them. And they make the mistake when they're ahead, they keep playing because it's playing with the house's money, when it's their money, and you could quit at any time, but the house counts on it. And when they're behind, even though the odds, you know, they'll lose more money if they play, they're trying to break even. So they just keep playing whether they're ahead or behind. And the more you play, the more the odds favor the house, right? But they go to the racetrack anyway, even though the house takes 17% or so in the U.S. And they buy lottery tickets where the house, the state in the U.S. takes 50% of the money. But that's okay. They understand it's entertainment. They go to a casino. Maybe they enjoy watching people. They get the thrill of drawing to an inside straight or whatever. But they don't lose their investment retirement money.
Yeah. As we speak, my best friend Dale, who runs our coffee business, is in Cleveland, Ohio, in the one hotel that is right next to or has a casino in it. And he's there. He took a limited amount of money and he's having a blast. But he takes a limited amount of money, and he's pretty convinced that he leaves a winner, you know, most of the time.
I should make sure he keeps a diary and actually write it down. I used to go to the casinos in Lake Tahoe. This is now 50 years ago. Mm. And when you had $2, you know, tables at blackjack, and I would play. And those days you were often facing like two or three deck hands. So you could count cards, and I knew which hands to draw and which not, and knew when to double down because the deck was stacked with more high cards. And I could usually, my rule was the $20 or 2 hours. So if I was up at 2 hours, I was walking away. And, you know, sometimes I'd lose in 20 minutes and sometimes I'd last 2 hours, but I had a little bit of fun testing my skill and stuff. And you could see the dealer laughing and smiling because he knew what, and he would let me do it because, you know, I wasn't betting thousands that, you know, and which they would have kicked me off the tables then or broken my leg.
And just one last thing is, you mentioned about doctor, you had a story about doctor. And for those people who are doctors, go to episode 746 and you can listen to me talk to James Dolly, who wrote the book, The White Coat Investor. And that, there it is.
And you see, this is how I learned how you could beat the dealer.
So by Ed Thorpe.
Yeah, he's the guy who broke the bank in Las Vegas.
Beat the dealer, a winning strategy. Yeah, that's amazing.
Read his book and learned how to, you know, play blackjack. At least put now, of course, you got five deck hands and they shuffle it halfway through. And, you know, it's much harder to to win, and they've got spy glasses, they're looking down and all this stuff.
There's a great interview by Tim Ferriss on the Tim Ferriss Show of Ed Thorpe, and I really, really enjoyed that, just hearing
him. There's a great movie about that.
What was the name of that? I can't remember.
I can't remember, but yeah, it was a great story.
Speaking of that, you gave a great recommendation to me, and I'll mention it, which was Department Q.
Yeah.
And as you said, the first few...
Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, the first few episodes, you said it starts a little slow. And it certainly makes you think that, boy, Scottish people are just mad, angry, mean people. But maybe it was just the people who are in the... But
it does take a while, but the story is very clever and the lead is really good.
Yeah. And you can see that they got a lot of room to bring new episodes of that, you know, a new series like that. So that was a good one.
Exactly.
So anyways, let's now talk about, we're going to wrap up. So I appreciate, you know, this story. I think it was great. And this chapter helps us. And we are now next going to discuss chapter 41 in our next episode, not right now. And that is A Tale of Two Strategies. For listeners out there who want to keep up with all that Larry is doing, follow him on Twitter or X at Larry Swedrow. Follow him also on LinkedIn. But most importantly, get his Substack. In fact, you'll get book recommendations. What was the latest one I just saw? And I read through it. I can't remember what it was, but I'm a senior moment, but I read every one of yours that come in on Substack. So I highly recommend that people do that. So this is your worst podcast host, Andrew Stott, saying, I'll see you on the upside.